The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Shadate Hargett Hill from the North Carolina Reading Service. We are starting with July's issue of Oprah Magazine. On the cover, we have Miss O in blue jean outfit, denim outfit, we can call it, a blue jean shirt and blue jeans with some blue sandals, closed-toe sandals. She's looking very beautiful, and she has her hair out and wavy, and she's smiling very brightly as she has a pizza on a pizza cutting board. She's outside, and she has an outdoor kitchen, and it looks to me that she's about to get on board and do some cooking. In the back of her, you have different wines that are in a bucket. You also have some tomatoes sitting out there in the kitchen as well, as she's taking the pizza, looks like, to be put into the outdoor pizza oven. And of course, we have O in white, and in an orange color, we have the words Oprah Magazine. On the cover, it says, "When the going got tough, meet the rock star governors who came to our rescue. The grill, the thrill of the grill, for anyone who's ever wanted to be, for anyone who's ever wanted to barbecue a pizza. The books that take you on vacation, hop in a hammock and off you go. And of course, the O-List, Made in America, your chance to show small businesses some love." Let's take a look at the contents in the magazine. Features: traveling lighter, dreaming of far-flung destinations, explore our guide to greener getaways, packed with innovative ways to see the world while safeguarding the planet. Plus, another Alexandra Fuller on getting, author Alexandra Fuller on getting grounded. "Where are you going?" Sally Ann Robinson returned to her South Carolina birthplace with a mission to keep the culture of her ancestors alive. "Women of the World, because there's no better or safer summer escape than a great book. We scoured the globe for must-reads by 28 female authors you should know. All fired up. Make room on the grill for a sizzling twist. Watermelon, avocados, nectarines, and other delicious surprises that will brighten your outdoor bash. Live your best life. Actor Yara Shahidi reveals a sweet secret. A former graphic designer's fanciful cakes turn icing into high art and more. The World According to Gail. Editor-at-large Gail King anticipates an inspiring memoir from Alex Trebek. Dares to go meatless at one of Denver's top steakhouses and takes a new summer dress for a spin. Love that. Rock the tote. Versatile summer bags to carry you stylishly from work to weekend. O's Denim God. Do your true blues need an upgrade? Creative director Adam Glassman zeroes in on the season's most flattering jeans and jackets. Great buys under $100. Looking hot while keeping cool in these California-inspired basics. Adam Style Sheet. Take these dresses from day to night with just right top to toe accessories. And Adam's Home Style Sheet. Coastal decor gives you space and an easy breezy update. Let's not forget In Beautiful. That's Amore. Transport yourself to the Amalfi Coast with these perfumes, notes of jasmine and cedar. Inside the beauty closet, a fresh fighting oil, a skin soothing serum, and more beauty, director Brian Underwood's top picks of the month. Inside Job, how to put your best Zoom face forward, including pro tips for a DIY dye job, and the last word on how often you need to wash your hair. Beauty Talk, transgender activist and actor MJ Rodriguez on stepping into her truth and shaking things up on pose. Feeling Good, pandemic health heroes, hospital workers take us to the front lines of the fight against COVID-19. Eat like a mermaid. Getting your greens now means digging into seaweed. Check out our cheat sheet for the healthiest and tastiest. The Alzheimer's epidemic no one is talking about. African Americans are disproportionately affected by Alzheimer's disease. Leading researchers offer insights on why and what can be done about it. Cultivating abundance. In the second installment of our series, Old Life Coach Martha Beck helps a woman weed out her worries and harvest hope. In Refresh, how alloy will keep you from feeling the burn. Tips for staying chill while sweating it out. A blanket, a knapsack, and cushy shoes for your next outdoor expedition and more. Let's eat. My farm to your table. Oprah's ingredient of the month, peaches, the ever-sweet fruit that tops her favorite summer salad. Fast or fancy, two takes on nice cream, a dairy-free treat that tastes as rich as the real deal. Someone's in the kitchen. Food blogger and cookbook author Mandy Lee stirs up a peppery chow oil. All those and much more coming up this month in the July edition of O Magazine. First, let's get started with the 2020 visionaries. United They Stand. We have Charlie Baker, Massachusetts, Gretchen Whitmer, Michigan, Andrew Cuomo, New York, Michelle Lujan, Grissom, New Mexico, Ned Lamont, Connecticut, Mike DeWine, Ohio, Gavin Newsom, California. And who are all these to us? Governors who govern. When the going got really tough, courageous state leaders from both parties got going. When our current governors were sworn in, none of them could have anticipated that they'd one day be closing schools and beaches and daycare centers, explaining R factors to their constituents, fighting for the medical equipment that could keep those constituents alive, giving daily briefings on hospitalizations and death tolls, and canceling graduations and funerals. They also probably never anticipated having quite such a moment in the spotlight. Search YouTube and you'll find fans of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo literally singing his praises. A New York City opera ode, smitten satirist Randy Rainbow's Andy, in which he identifies as homosexual. Missy Models' I Am Lovin' Cuomo, set to the tune of Britney Spears' You Drive Me Crazy. Search Etsy and you'll find tube socks bearing California Governor Gavin Newsom's face. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine's daily press briefings have inspired a hashtag. Hashtags wine with DeWine. Never mind that the governor usually goes on air at 2 p.m. Entrepreneur Ohioans are selling wine with DeWine. Glasses printed with the tagline, it's 2 o'clock somewhere. And Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear's fans have created a rash of admiring memes comparing him to everyone from Mr. Rogers to Superman. At this surreal moment in our history, when the only certain thing is uncertainty, nothing could be more appealing than a leader with the political and moral authority to stir America through a crisis. Governors have never had the most thrilling job in politics, but suddenly they're rock stars. Throughout the pandemic, state leaders have stepped up to one unforeseen challenge after another. Washington Governor Jay Inslee was forced to head right into the eye of the storm when his state became the first to report a COVID-19 death. Normally, I'd have 10 months of briefings and scientific assessments in order to make decisions on this scale, Inslee says. Now I have 10 minutes and one page memo. But he and his team of experts have risen to the occasion. Dr. Anthony Fauci of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases has held up Washington's social distancing efforts as an example of how to flatten the curve. Others have up and become mavericks, like Maryland's Larry Hogan, who, frustrated with the federal government's lack of response, bought 500,000 testing kits from South Korea. They've had the courage to make what Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer called gut-wrenching decisions. closing schools, churches, and small businesses, and they've stuck to those decisions, even when it meant making enemies in the name of public safety, as Whitmer did when her stay-at-home orders were met with armed protests and death threats. Not only have U.S. governors held constituents' lives in their hands, they've done so with humanity and humility, qualities that have been all too rare in politics of late, offering a powerful reminder of what real service looks like. Though we'll be living with the effects of COVID-19 for who knows how long, our crises have come with a not inconsequential silver lining. We've seen what it means to govern with grace. We have the chance to craft a blueprint that puts the needs of our underserved communities, communities of color, low-income communities, non-communities, tribal communals, at the forefront and create a more equitable and just society. There's no playbook, so we're trying to be as innovative and possible. And gathering input from my fellow Oregonians have been important. I just saw a photograph of a woman getting her nails done through a mail slot social distancing. That keeps my spirit up. Oregon Governor Kate Brown said that. You know the saying, you will know the truth and it will set you free. Well, I know the truth and I seek to spread that, not the virus. I'm not persuaded by anyone who thinks turning up their volume increases the validity of their statements. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb said that. It'll be a great day when we can once again celebrate weddings, birthdays, and holidays, because it will mean that we got through this together as one New Jersey family, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. The virus doesn't see blue states and red states, and we're showing that Republicans and Democrats can get things done together. I'm hopeful. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan. Leading in this moment is incredibly difficult. It's having to make quick decisions with incomplete or imperfect information. It's acknowledging when you're wrong and being willing to change course. It's putting party politics aside and building bridges to keep your constituents safe. Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo. When we have a vaccine, things will go back to the way they were, but let's not go all the way back. I hope we come out of this crisis better than we were before. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. We've reduced the spread in this state because people were willing to listen to science. If you don't do that, really terrible things can happen. Another obvious situation that demands we listen to science, climate change. So if we're going to take away our lessons from this experience, I hope it's that ignoring science and delaying our response to essential threats can be deadly. Washington Governor Jay Inslee. And we cannot go on without mentioning our own governor here, who has done his best to keep us afloat and keeping us going. Governor Roy Cooper. Now we're taking a look at behind the scenes. We have pictures of Oprah cutting pizza as well as showing us great pizza. And she says pizza is so simple, just so delicious. So she's showing us how she has the pizza done on the grill. And we're talking about a slice of heaven. Nothing brings people together like breaking bread, especially if that bread is flat, round, and topped with mounds of fresh mozzarella, ripe tomatoes, and wait for it, truffles. For this month's cover, Oprah captured the spirit of summer entertaining with a pizza party in her Santa Barbara backyard. Before the onset of social distancing, that is. Once the crew got the perfect shot, they were ready to dig into the piping hot edible prop. Of course, the hostess with the mostest wanted to amp up the culinary zing for her guests. So she got a little, shall we say, truffle happy. Now, this is not your average pizza. Also, we have pictures of you don't need a fancy setup to cook pizza outdoors. A chamber placed on your gas grill turns it into an oven that will have a pie ready in 2 to 4 minutes. You can get that from Series Pizza Oven Box Kit, $450, at bakerstonebox.com. We're talking about Oprah's attire. Blue jeans and the jeans are back into the blue. Denim on denim look can be a fashion do. As Oprah had it, the key is to mix different washes and fabric weights. There are some fun and fashionable ways to update your jean pool. For even more, they have O's Denim Guide that we'll get to soon. You can make soft, super soft, sustainable fabric, which is like Oprah's shirt, and put that together with a bucket hat from Michael Kors. You can add some NYDJ Amy double button skinny jeans. And if you would like a jacket for those cool nights, a tie-dye denim jacket, you can put some beautiful earrings to it with pearls, blue and pearl earrings. You can also jazz that up with more jewelry, like a lab-grown diamond ring. And you can put that together with some wedge sandals to create a wonderful denim look. And now we're moving to some contributors of the magazine that we'll be reading their stories about. Rose Less Traveled. Five of the talents from this month's issue share their take on seeing the world. Alexandra Fuller, who's a writer, she says, "When I travel, I always bring my thermos flask for tea. My favorite way to get around is on horseback. I have an old mare called Sunday who has been my sole silent partner for nearly 20 years. She has seen me through the birth of a child, the death of a child, the end of a marriage, the start and end of new loves. When all else is lost, I can get lost with Sunday. The most beautiful place I've ever been is Mount Meru in Tanzania. I came across Cape Buffalo and colobus monkeys and slept under a sky so untouched by light, it was as if we slipped in time." Tayari Jones, author. "When I travel, I always bring my address book. I love sending postcards and mementos from the road, especially when I'm abroad. Nothing says I'm thinking of you like exotic postage. My favorite way to get around is by rail. I've traveled on trains all over the world, high speed vintage, and I've never met one I didn't love. This includes roller coasters. A book that makes me feel like I visited a faraway place is A Tall History of Sugar by Cordella Forbes, a mesmerizing love story that takes place over 50 years ago in Jamaica." Mandy Lee, a chef. "Someone's in the kitchen. When I travel, I always bring my curiosity. It's what drives me to move and keep moving, not to relax, not to unwind, but to know more, to know what's out there. My favorite way to get around is by scooter. I love the spontaneity of it, the sensory connection with my surroundings, the freedom of maneuvering, the speed and efficiency. A book that makes me feel like I visited a faraway place is Anything by Anthony Bourdain." Benedict Evans, photographer. "When I travel, I always bring my camera and earplugs and a good novel. My favorite way to get around is by bicycle, though I do also have a thing for small, quick German cars. The most beautiful place I've ever been is the Giza Necropolis at sunset, or perhaps that time I flew through the Northern Lights over Alaska, or Manhattan's Lower East Side, or a hot, rainy summer night." Megan Rabbit, a writer. "My home away from home is the North Fork of Long Island, where I spend weeks every summer on rocky beaches with my 7 and 4-year-old nieces. When I travel, I always bring an oversized scarf, which has a ridiculous number of uses. Neck warmer, plain blanket, face mask, shawl, makeshift beach towel, impromptu picnic seating. I could go on and on. My favorite way to get around is on foot. There's no better way to get to know a place than by wandering around without a schedule." And now we move to the question. This month we wondered, what's the one place you always take people who come to visit you? The Canadian Niagara Falls. "Growing up, I took them for granted, but seeing them through a visitor's eyes is like experiencing them for the first time." That came from Diane Taylor, St. Catharines, Ontario. The beautiful Fuller Gardens in Northampton, my hometown. The gardens are its hidden gem. There's a great place to stop and smell the roses, literally. It's such a peaceful place to get lost in. I even had my wedding photos taken there. Becky Gaumont, Bedford, New Hampshire. eBay's Landing National Historic Reserve on Wind Bay Island in Puget Sound is full of coastal trails, wetlands, and plant and animal habitats. It has a bluff with views across the Strait of Juan de Fuca of Olympic Peninsula to the west, the Cascades to the east, and Mount Rainier to the south. Sioux Falls, Langley, Washington. Powell City of Books, the largest independent bookstore in the U.S. It occupies a full city block. I take my father when he comes from Ireland to visit me. Carmel Benach, Portland, Oregon. Haggie's Catfish Hotel Restaurant in Shiloh. The catfish, ribs, and hush puppies are always delicious. It opened in 1938 and is still family run. Veron Severe Pride, Savannah, Tennessee. German Village here in Columbus. My grandparents are German, and it reminds me of my family. I had my first beer at Schmidt's Sausage House, studied at Stoff's Coffee Roasters, and enjoyed the neighborhood with my grandparents. Emily Bishop, Columbus, Ohio. Red Rocks Park and Amphitheater. You can do yoga there in the morning and see an incredible band in the same spot at night. There's a sense of history, not only about the musicians who've played, but also because of the fossil fragments there. Alexis Savas, Castle Rock, Colorado. And if you want to know next month's question, it would be, what's your most treasured keepsake of a loved one you've lost? So think about that till next month. And of course, we start this week of Here We Go. This spring was like no other, and none of us is sure what fall will bring. But we have here and we have now, and that's something worth celebrating. I don't mean it's time to start a conga line. I just believe this summer can and should be a time to appreciate the simple pleasures of life. For me, nothing says summer like ripe, juicy peaches. I use them in one of my all-time favorite salads. I also love cooking outdoors, and this month we're exploring all the grilling you can do beyond the basics. Everything from watermelon to, yes, pizza. After a marvelous meal, it's time to feed your spirit. A good story takes you to parts of the world you've never visited without even requiring you to leave your front porch. Our annual summer reading roundup is overflowing with books, guaranteed to transport you. Someday, of course, we'll get back to actual travel, but this time of staying home has been healing for our planet, and I can imagine a future where we'll all choose to get around more consciously and sustainably. For inspiration and some very solid how-to information, see our Greener Guide to Going Places. Let the sun shine in and read on. That's Oprah. In living your best life, we turn to the high five, a whole handful of things to cheer about this month. Turning the tide. The ocean's trash is washed ashore's treasure. Volunteers at the Oregon Arts Nonprofit have used 25 tons of discarded flip-flops, bottle caps, toys, and other beach debris to create more than 80 larger-than-life sculptures of marine animals whose health is endangered by plastic pollution. Learn how you can lend a hand and where Daisy the polar bear, Priscilla the parrotfish, and the gang will be exhibited next at washedashore.org. The showings must go on. Across the country, movie theaters are shuttered and slushy machines are silent. But thanks to a trio of quick-thinking producers, Tribeca Enterprises, IMAX, and AT&T Entertainment is coming soon to a big screen near you. The Tribeca Drive-In series, which kicked off June 25th, is delivering a selection of contemporary films, cinematic classics, and special music and sports events to old-school venues and other outdoor spaces nationwide. Learn more at TribecaFilm.com and start stockpiling your Junior Mints now. The Notorious LOC, Think Hip Hop and the Library of Congress. Think Hip Hop and the Library of Congress have nothing in common? You haven't checked out Citizen DJ, an interactive tool that lets you make your own beats using 32,000 samples and counting from the library's audio and video collections, including a recording of Franklin D. Roosevelt addressing Congress, the tinkling score of 1900 silent film about a cartoonist, an interview with Olivia Newton-John, and so much more. Sounds like a rapper's and non-rapper's delight. Go to citizen-dj.labs.loc.gov. And Double X marks the spot. Any idea where America's first female dentist set up shop? Or where Emma Willard established the country's first secondary school for women? In honor of the centennial of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, the National Trust for Historic Preservation is crowdsourcing 1,000 locations where ladies made history, including sites both landmarked, the home where Susan B. Anthony was arrested for voting in 1872, and overlooked the house where Juliet Gordon Law Lowe held the first ever Girl Scout meeting. To help put women on the map, visit savingplaces.org. Constellation Prize. Since 1990, the Hubble Space Telescope has roamed galaxies far, far away, capturing stellar snapshots of distant planets, exploding stars, and other cosmic wonders. To mark the project's 30th anniversary, NASA went back through all those shots and chose 366, one for every day of the year, for an online gallery. Enter your birthday or any day. The Nubula shown here was on site February 8th, 2014. And get ready to see something out of the world, out of this world. You can go to image.gsfc.nasa.gov/HST_B-Day. You do what? Cinema's behind-the-scenes stars finally get their close-up. Once upon a time, a Hollywood before the advent of hyper-real digital photography and brain-bending CGI, whole worlds were created from pondered powdered pigments and giant bolts of fabric. Meticulously crafted backdrops brought 18th-century French courts, sweeping Western plains, and craggy alien planets to life, but the studio painters who made them were unsung masters. There are no signatures on these pieces, says Thomas Walsh, a production designer and former president of the Art Directors Guild. They weren't created to stand out. Countless backdrops were produced between the 1910s and 1960s, Tinseltown's golden age. Some imagine the misty trees behind the gazebo in The Sound of Music are lodged in cultural memory. Others from more obscure flicks, ever heard of Skirts Ahoy or Quick Before It Melts? Not so much. Either way, the artistry is undeniable. So, in 2017, when Walsh learned that J.C. Backings, a prominent backdrop rental company that owns thousands of vintage assets from MGM, among other studios, was going to shed more than 200 decades-old canvases, he swooped in. An image of New York City skyline or a genetic village can still be rented out, says Walsh. The ones with no commercial value were just sleeping at the bottom of the piles. That first crop of long-folded treasures have since become the Art Directors Guild Backdrop Recovery Project, an effort to archive the heirlooms. Each is cataloged as Walsh pursues his ultimate goal, finding appreciative homes for the canvases, whether in museums, universities, or a film buff's private collection. Not all would-be owners can safely exhibit the Titans. Someone in Illinois wants one for a silo, but that won't work. And not all pieces are especially or easily placed. Who wants a 90-foot piece of Middle Eastern desert? But Walsh believes every cinematic artwork deserves a bow. It'd be criminal to go into the future forgetting our past. The end. And they have beautiful pictures of backdrops, pictures of things that look like Savannah. You have pictures of the backdrop of the Sound of Music. You also have pictures of the president's Mount Rushmore in pictures here. My best pet. Former White House photographer and Instagram sensation Pete Souza has a shell of a time with his Russian tortoise, Charlotte. On how they met, about 20 years ago, our daughter brought Charlotte home after her friend, Charlotte's original owner, decided she didn't want a tortoise anymore. Of course, kids grow up, move out of the house, and leave their pets behind. On Happy Meals, Charlotte mostly eats grains, but on occasion we give her a piece of fruit or vegetable as a treat. Without fail, she ends up with a bit of strawberry or banana on her beak, which she's totally oblivious to. It's always a funny sight. On Acts of Faith, I say Charlotte puts up with people because I honestly think she'd rather we not be here. Obviously, she needs my wife and me for food and shelter, but beyond that, we're probably just a bother. That said, she is incredibly trusting of us. Sometimes she'll sleep with her head outside her shell, which is unusual. Most turtles retreat inside for protective purposes. She even lets us pet her at the head. On yard work, we have a cabin in Michigan where we spend some of the summer. If it's warm and sunny, I'll take Charlotte outside. You have to watch her, though. Originally, she came with a mat, peppers, but Originally, she came with a mate, peppers, but he escaped several summers ago and never returned. So now we keep a much closer eye on Charlotte, especially because she really loves to explore. At least I think that's what she's doing. Who knows what's in her mind? This story was as told to by MG. Follow Charlotte's adventures on Instagram at Charlotte the Tortoise. And now we turn to the world according to Gail. Eat. One of my favorite parts of traveling, trying new restaurants, which is how I discovered Garden Grace when I visited Denver in March for the last stop of Oprah's 2020 Vision, Your Life in Focus tour. The modern American steakhouse is known for its meat, so I was surprised when I was told I had to try the ganache. Boy, I'm glad I did. The pillowy pasta clouds were golden on the outside, truffly on the inside, and as delicious as they look in a photo. The food was so good. You can see me kissing my fingers, and saying, that I've added Garden Grace to my list of best restaurants on the road. Watch. I didn't plan on signing up for Disney Plus since the youngest person in my home is, well, me. My plans changed when I learned that the blockbuster musical Hamilton was coming to the streaming service this summer. 15 months before its previously scheduled theatrical release, the movie version, filmed over multiple performances in 2016, features original cast members Lin-Manuel Miranda as Alexander Hamilton, Leslie Odom Jr. as Aaron Burr, and was helmed by the original director, Thomas Kail. So even though I've seen the show 5 times, that's me with Lin-Manuel, his favorite dad and my favorite son, after a performance in Puerto Rico. That's a picture of Lin-Manuel, Gail, her son, and Lin-Manuel's father. You can bet that on July 3rd, my living room will be the room where Hamilton happens again. Note, you've got a choice. You can be pessimistic or you can be optimistic. It's a lot better to be optimistic because you stand a better chance of helping to cure yourself. That's how Alex Trebek explains his unwavering positivity in the face of his pancreatic cancer diagnosis. The Jeopardy host has historically been tight-lipped about his life, so I can't wait to read his memoir, The Answer Is, on July 21st. Inspired by the avalanche of goodwill he's experienced, Alex wanted people to know more about the man they've been cheering on. What he doesn't want, sympathy. He turns 80 in July and says he's had a hell of a good life. That may be true, Alex, but we're not ready to let you go. Bye. You've probably heard that J. Crew filed for bankruptcy protection in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. I hope the company comes roaring back, but in the meantime, I'm happy to report you can still shop their cool yet classic styles like a cotton maxi dress. Every year I search for the dress of summer, and I think this is it. For starters, nothing says vacation ready or staycation ready like nautical stripes, and you can dress it up for dining al fresco, hello, strappy sandals, or down for a beach walk. Looking at you, flip-flops? That's perfect, since I'll be wearing it on repeat. You can get it at J.Crew, jcrew.com for $118. Listen, Bigger Love is the name of John Legend's seventh studio album, out now, and it's an apt description of my feelings for the EGOT-winning musician and songwriter. He's had me since 2004 when he released his first mash hit, Ordinary People. 16 years later, I'm still buying and singing along to anything and everything he writes and produces. As always, the new music includes just the lyrics we need now. In the track Actions, he croons, "Actions speak louder than love songs." To that I say, preach, John, preach. We now delve into the section called Beautiful, how to be ready for your close-up. Thanks to work-related Zooms and virtual happy hours, we're living on camera like never before. Try these tips from makeup artists for a small screen glow-up. Number one, get even. Layers of makeup can highlight fine lines and pores, and the camera only makes them more apparent. Celebrity makeup artists Quinn Murphy and Daniel Martin recommend foregoing full foundation in favor of spot treating your blemishes, dark spots, or areas of redness with a light diffusing concealer like Kosas Revealer Concealer, $28 at Kosas.com. Number two, move toward the light. Natural lighting is best. Murphy recommends sitting in a room with just one window and facing it, with lamps turned off. Multiple light sources behind or either side of you can create unflattering shadows. Three, play up your eyes. Line the top lashes with a brown eyeliner like L'Oreal Paris Lee Liner Signature in brown denim, $11 at the drugstore. Get close to the base of the lashes to define their shape and create a dark backdrop that makes lashes look thicker, says Murphy. A coat of mascara adds to the effect. Number four, create contrast. Two-dimensional computer monitors and smartphone screens can make you look like flat and wan, says Murphy. The remedy, a touch of powder bronzer like Dior Skin Color Games Collection Mineral Nude in Warm Flame, $50 at Dior.com. Martin recommends swiping it under the cheeks, along the temples, and under the jawline, then highlighting your cheekbones or blurring fine lines, such as crow's feet, with a clear emollient balm like Tatcha the Serum Stick, $48 at Sephora.com. Number five, assume the position. It's good to situate the camera on your computer or phone a touch higher, says Martin. This forces you to look up slightly, directing light toward the center of your face, which helps detract from dark under eye circles or skin discoloration. Six, add color carefully. A hint of pigment on the lips helps define and add dimension. A sheer berry balm will impart a flush without looking fussy, says Martin. We like Becca Hydrant Light Plumpy Lip Balm in Dew, $19 at BeccaCosmetics.com. Ingenious DIY hair color. Can you still call gray regrowth roots if it's halfway down your head? Getting to the salon may not be an may not be an option right now, but dabbing in at home hair color is more foolproof than ever with Color & Co. from $20, colorandco.com. Take a brief online quiz or have a virtual consultation with a trained colorist, and bespoke box of dye will be delivered to your doorstep based on your hair type, how much upkeep you want to commit to, and the exact results are what you're after. How often do I really need to shampoo? Even if you've been perfectly happy lounging around in a product-free top knot, you still have to give your hair a good scrubbing to keep it healthy. Our flowchart, created with the help of Bridget Hill, a trichologist and colorist at the Paul Labricot Salon, and Skincare Spa in New York, will help you find your best washing schedule. Do you color or chemically treat your hair? If you said yes, how would you describe your hair density? Would you say it's fine to medium or medium to thick? If it's fine to medium, how often are you using products like spray, gel, or cream? If it's medium to thick, do you sweat often or have a dry, itchy scalp? If you say yes to that, then that is how you know what kind of gels and sprays you need to use. If you say no to that, every 3 days, washing no more than twice per week will keep your mane clean but won't disrupt your scalp's natural oils. Now, if you said yes to fine to medium and you're looking at sprays, gels, or cream, you'll ask the question, I'm a perfect junkie? If you are, every other day, any oily scalp or finer texture needs to be cleaned the most frequently. Now, if you have fine to medium hair and you use sprays, gels, or creams, you can say, I use only a few products here and there. And if that's the case, again, every 3 days. Now, do you have color chemically treated hair? If you say no to that, how would you describe your hair texture? Would you say straight to wavy or curly to coily? If you said curly to coily, are you currently wearing a protective style? If you said yes, well then bi-weekly. If you're wearing a style like braids or locks, spritz your scalp with diluted shampoo every other week. If you said no to curly or coily hair, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most tightly coiled, how tight is your curl pattern? If it's a 6 to 10, take a peek at one of your strands, and would you say it is thin or thick? If it is thin, every 3 days shampoo. If it's thick, every 10 days. Your hair type does best when washed infrequently, but tends to be dry. Hill recommends quick water-only rinses between washes. Now, if you have straight to wavy hair and you said no to the hair texture, you will be on a scale of 1 to 5 with your density. And if you have a hair density of medium to thick, you're going to go every 3 days. If it's fine to medium, again, you're going to go every other day. Yes, you need sunscreen indoors. Even if you're not outside soaking up the rays, you're not completely protected within your home's four walls. Up to 72% of UV rays can penetrate clear glass windows, according to research in the Journal of American Academy of Dermatology. Ever-present smartphone, laptop, and television screens can also have an effect, researchers show. We know that blue light from screens can produce oxidative stress in the skin, says Orit Marikowitz, MD, director of pigmented lesions and skin cancer at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. Studies have found that, like UV rays, this light can damage skin and cause premature aging. She recommends a mineral-based sunscreen with zinc oxide or titanium dioxide for protection against both UV and blue light. In our feeling good section, Pandemic Health Heroes. As COVID-19 began invading America's most densely populated city, the 47,000 plus staffers at New York Presbyterian Hospital prepared as best they could for an onslaught. Meet three caregivers who fought the fight of our lives. Marie Laure Day Romney, emergency medicine physician at New York Presbyterian Columbia University Irving Medical Center. On January 21st, as she heard reports of Seattle's first confirmed COVID-19 case, Marie Laure D. Romney, MD, thought about New York City's packed subways and sidewalks. She realized it was only a matter of time before the emergency department, or ED, she oversaw at the Allen Hospital, a 200-bed community facility in Upper Manhattan, would be overrun with coronavirus patients. To prevent the overloading of hospital systems and the spread of infection in close quarters, she and her colleagues would have to completely reimagine the ED, and they have to do it fast. After some preliminary discussions, Romney's team officially met in early March to determine how they would handle the isolation and ballooning volume of COVID-19 patients. And as the outbreak picked up, sped in mid-March, it was time to put their plans into action. First, a wing of outpatient rooms was converted into a respiratory unit where critically ill patients were housed together. Romney assigned staff specifically to the unit, which allowed them to work more efficiently and extend the life of their valuable personal protective equipment, since they wouldn't have to remove it to treat the uninfected. As coronavirus cases proliferated, an open treatment area was transformed into an additional pop-up ICU. Partitions created makeshift private rooms. Fans and vents filtered the air to prevent pathogens from escaping. In tents outside the hospital, fever and cough clinics allow low-risk patients to seek treatment without risking exposure in the ED. There were points when we were stretched thin, but at least our plan made for organized chaos, said Romney. By April 7th, as many as 85% of the Allen's beds were occupied by COVID 19 patients. Romney's team helped facilitate family video chats and frequently checked in with those infected to remind them they weren't alone. Romney herself dove into 12-hour shifts, checking oxygen tank levels, coordinating shift changes, and quickly directing the newly admitted to their bed assignments, all to keep patients moving through the ED to make room for new ones. In mid-April, the Allen's ED staff learned that for the first time in weeks, discharges outnumber admissions, that energized Romney, as did witnessing her colleagues. New Yorkers and people all over the world banding together. For better or worse, our actions impact one another as a local and global community, she says. That's a fundamental lesson that I hope will translate beyond the crisis. Eugenio Messo, environmental services worker, New York Presbyterian Morgan Stanley Children's Hospital. About 20 times a day, 28-year-old Eugenio Messo walked into a COVID-19 patient's room wearing a blue disposable cap, goggles, two face masks, one N95, the other surgical, purple rubber gloves, and a full-length yellow surgical gown over his red scrubs. His black Crocs decorated with a blue bird, a pizza, a red electric guitar, and other colorful charms were encased in blue booties. As quietly as possible, Messel wiped down every surface with disinfectant and mopped the floor. Sweat trickled down his back and his goggles fogged up. Knowing he couldn't touch his goggles or face, he focused on his breathing and his methodical work. Before leaving, Messa lifted medical waste from its bin, taking care to ensure nothing spilled, and double bagged it. I stayed calm by reminding myself that as long as I was protected and doing the job correctly, I had nothing to fear, he says. Mesa had been housekeeping at the hospital for a little over a year when his supervisor pulled him aside in early March and asked whether he would clean the rooms of COVID-19 patients, a job many people would be unwilling to do out of fear for their and their loved ones' lives. But Mesa didn't hesitate. "Yes, I can do it." He soon found himself working 7 days a week, sometimes 16-hour shifts, with a team of four other housekeepers. "This is about helping out and making sure we fight this as a unit all together," he says. "The few of us who go inside these rooms were brave." Mesa and his colleagues worked two to a cart, switching off between cleaning and managing the supplies. A fifth housekeeper continually ran to the basement to replenish the stock of disinfectant, garbage bags, and other necessities. As an athlete who played baseball at Sullivan County Community College and still participates in several softball leagues in Manhattan and the Bronx, Mesa was in good shape for the physically demanding role. His competitor's mindset helped him stick with his grueling new schedule. When he'd leave the hospital after his shift, he'd often work out, eat, and go straight to bed. "I have to make sure I stayed strong so I could wake up the next day and do the same thing again," says Mesa, who feels an obligation not just to the patients, but to his fellow caregivers. "Working nonstop is stressful, but I also feel good about contributing to the cause, making sure that those rooms are clean and organized makes it easier for the doctors and nurses to do their jobs and help people get better." Diana Brinkman, critical care nurse, New York Presbyterian Will Cornell Medical Center. Like every healthcare worker in New York in mid-March, Diana Brinkman knew the coronavirus was bearing down in the city, but she had no idea why she, a program coordinator in New York Presbyterian's cardiac unit, had been summoned to the small conference room that was serving as the hospital's COVID-19 command center. Her boss's boss, the chief cardiac nursing officer, got straight to the point. Could Brinkman train the hospital's nurses to treat the tsunami of COVID-19 patients headed to the ICU? And by yesterday, the ask felt surreal. True, for the past 2 years, Brinkman's jobs had been to educate and assess the hospital's cardiac nurses, but training an army of caregivers from a half dozen specialties for potentially deadly work for which there were barely established protocols. Luckily, she says, there wasn't time to be nervous. Onboarding a new ICU nurse normally takes about 3 months, and those caregivers have often already spent a few years preparing specifically to treat patients in critical condition. Now nurses certified in anesthesia, pediatrics, and operating room care were being tasked with the job. Their new patients would be the sickest of the sick, dependent on catheters, feeding tubes, and multiple intravenous lines. Each bed in the ICU is surrounded by phalanx of machines measuring temperature, blood pressure, pulse, and respiration rate. You've got to interpret what all the numbers mean and anticipate what the patient is going to need next, Brinkman says. It can be overwhelming. Even more daunting, the nurses would be required to monitor a ventilator, a necessity for most COVID-19 patients in critical condition. People with breathing tubes can't talk or cough, so you have to know what signs to look for if they need suction or can't tolerate the airflow. For 4 days, Brinkman and a team of 8 colleagues worked nonstop at the hospital and at home to streamline a curriculum from a 12-week process into a laser-focused 3-hour prep course. Then they put their plan in motion, converting 3 hospital conference rooms into classrooms, each dedicated to a specific topic. The trainees arrived in batches, 30 in the morning, 30 in the afternoon, according to their specialty, so that the instruction could be tailored to their particular knowledge gaps. An operating room nurse, for example, would need more ventilator training than a nurse and an anesthesiologist would. The lessons were both general, how to handle common ICU medications, and specific to COVID-19, how to minimize the chance of exposing yourself to the virus while inserting and removing a breathing tube. In just 10 days, Brickman's task force transformed 413 nurses from throughout the hospital into critical care specialists. As the surge of coronavirus cases inundated the ICU, the team Brickman helped assemble rose to the challenge. And as the number of discharges ticked up and New York City's curve started to flatten, she eventually saw reason to be hopeful. "I'm optimistic that many of our patients will continue to get well," Brickman says, "and that someday soon there will be an end to this disease." We thank all you nurses, doctors, healthcare workers, maintenance people, housekeepers, for keeping us safe and keeping us alive. And $20 million is the tone. That's the donation UCLA received last fall to establish the Badari Kindness Institute, the world's first interdisciplinary research center dedicated to exploring the psychological, sociological, biological, political, and economic benefits of being good to one another and ourselves. Science says it's money well spent. A University of Oxford study published last year linked benevolence toward friends, strangers, or yourself to increase happiness, and new findings in the Journal of Health Psychology found a correlation between self-compassion, judging your failures less harshly, for example, and beneficial behaviors like exercise and meditation. As we await the Institute's discoveries, we'll take to heart this advice from the Dalai Lama: be kind whenever possible. It is always possible. And next week, we'll have some great, great stuff going on. July, August 2020. After months spent indoors, you may be yearning to explore the world in all its juicy splendor, but considering anew how your choices affect Mother Nature. We'll talk about the guide to mindful travel, offer ideas for responsible journeys that will fill your spirit without depleting the earth. And if you prefer an armchair adventure, start with Old Summer Reading Spectacular, which spotlights 28 transporting titles from female authors all over the globe. And to expand your background barbecue horizons, we're going to check out Grilling Extravaganza with recipes for fruit, greens, and other delights that take your alfresco game way beyond the hot dog. Well, unfortunately, our time has ended for this edition of Oprah Magazine. We hope you've enjoyed it. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. We want you to continue to join us, continue to be with us wherever we go. If you would like to give us a call, you can give us a call at 919-832-5138. Better yet, check out our website at ncreadingservice.org. Again, that's ncreadingservice.org. I am Shadate, and thank you for listening. See you next time on the radio.